It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan inside the TD Garden on this Marathon Monday as we bring the show to you from the TD Garden. And so much going on in the Boston sports world right now. We're going to get to it all on the program here tonight. Matt joins us from San Antonio, Texas, where it's deja vu. It seems like the Spurs play the Grizzlies just about every single year in the first round of the playoffs. At least it feels like it. That's the case once again as the Spurs and the Grizzlies play game two of their series tonight as we talk on Monday after the Spurs won convincingly in game one. Of course, Matt doing TV pre and post halftime on Fox Sports Southwest for that series, and joins us right now to talk some NBA basketball, some Bruins. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, and Chris, I have a newfound respect for what you do, because the Spurs live broadcast team stepped it up for the playoffs, and we do 1 hour pregame shows in addition to our half hour postgame show, and going from a half hour to an hour of having to come up with content and being on point like you do every day is very difficult.
It's funny, I was reading, there was a really good article about Matt in New York Times, and I was reading the article, and it was talking about how you're going through like meetings prior to the show and prep and so forth. I'm like, this is all the stuff he learned from me. Because
I've been practicing for years.
Yeah, we prep for every show. I mean, the meetings are usually pretty rigorous. We have that conference call for about an hour to go over what we're going to talk about, and then the show kind of happens.
Chris emails me the rundown. I take rigorous notes, do some research.
No, at our show we pretty much make up. Actually, no, it's not pretty much. We make it up just as we go on. I have a mental log of what I want to talk about, but Matt has no idea what the questions are going
to
be.
We've been known to take a hard left turn from time to time.
Which during your career, I mean, that was journalistic integrity. I couldn't let you know what the questions were going to be because the hard-hitting, probing nature of the questions. And I had to, despite the fact that it was the show had your name on it.
But now you're a colleague, and I'm a member of the industry.
So you're saying you want a rundown?
A little different.
Because I don't know if I have enough time for that.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, let's just keep it the way it's going.
Yeah, it's gone on for. It's like one of those things where it may or may not be going well, but it's gone on. It's like a marriage. It's gone on for so long. But what's the use in changing things?
It's like the Boston Marathon.
Exactly. You know what? You don't change. We can't change the show now. It's been the same way. It's been the same show for years and years and years. And whether it's good or bad, you know, the change itself might be just shocking to people. So
it's a fixture.
It's a fixture, right? Right. So I texted you after the Celtics game, and it was a real emotional night inside TD Garden after Game One. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and to put that text into context for all our dozens of listeners. We've been doing this show for, 13 years?
Something like that.
I have never received a text like this from you, Chris, after a game. I don't know if I had to call, a hotline to keep an eye.
But you're a colleague now. So, therefore, before, when you were playing, you were too important. I couldn't text you something like that. Because it might distract from your intense preparation for your series. So I couldn't bother you with the formality of the Celtics.
Enough of the suspense. Why don't you describe what was in the text?
So basically, I repeated over and over again, kind of like on the ledge, that the Celtics were not going to go out in the first round. They're not going to go out in the first round. It's just one game. It's just one game. There was a feel last night, and I think that, as we've talked about before, the Celtics are a max effort team. And when there is a team that has a skill level which is comparable to the Celtics, and they play to that same level of effort and intensity and execution, or a little bit above it, the Celtics struggle. And it was apparent in that game one that the Celtics are going to have a series. And but the Bulls present some matchup problems for them, particularly on the glass. Now, am I going to sit here and say that the Celtics are going to lose the series? No. But I am going to say the series is going to go at least six, and I think seven games, and then the Celtics are going to have to fight for their lives on the home floor in that game seven.
Well, one thing, just to put this whole Eastern Conference playoff bracket in context, the number one team, the Celtics, had 53 wins.
Correct.
So there's not a ton of separation in the win-loss column between one and eight. So you got to think that pretty much every series is going to be somewhat competitive, and that became very apparent after every team's, you know, first game of the series. The Cavs barely won. Celtics lost. The Raptors got beat by 14 points at home against Milwaukee. That one, I know we want to talk about the Celtics, but that one really surprised me because, mm-hmm. you know, the Raptors having made that run to the conference finals last year and taking Cleveland to six, I thought this was their year where they were going to kind of step up right out of the gate. But yet again, I forget how many years in a row it's been, they lost their home opener in the playoffs, and Lowry and DeRozan struggled mightily from the field. And, you know, for me, being disappointed in that probably doesn't compare with you, your disappointment in that first Celtics loss, but what I texted you back, and you did allude to it in your, you know, feebly in your text to me, it's just one game. It's a seven-game series. There's a ton of basketball to be played. You know, when you're the home team and you lose one of those first two, you do give up home court advantage. Now they have to go and win at least one on the road, like you said, to get that game seven back on their home court, which is why you play the regular season for that advantage. So I would not panic yet. I would call game two a must win. If they go down 0-2 and drop the first two at home, then, you know, I think that text message is much more warranted.
So the biggest and most concerning thing in this game, as I mentioned before, a couple things actually from game one. One was the rebounding in this contest. The Chicago Bulls had 20 offensive rebounds. Celtics had 36 rebounds total. And the Bulls out-rebounded the Celtics by 17, 53-36. The other thing was the play of the Chicago's role players. Bobby Portis dropped 19 on the Celtics. Robin Lopez, 14 and 11. And the Celtics, you know, really got nothing from their bench. They got nothing from their role players. And the rebounding, I kind of expected the Celtics to struggle rebounding. They have against the Bulls all year long. And they're going to struggle against teams that are bigger than them. That's kind of been the course for the Celtics. But I expected the Celtics, when, you know, just Wade was on the floor with the four bench guys, I expected the Celtics to be able to push the margin in their favor. But instead, that's where the lead went away early in the second quarter.
Yeah, you know, in an interesting correlation, I don't know if anyone back in New England watched the Spurs game one against Memphis, but Memphis came out red hot, you know, much like the Bulls, built an early lead in the first quarter. And then when the Spurs bench came on the floor and you had Manu and Patty Mills and Pau Gasol and all those, Jonathan Simmons and those guys, they went on a 10-2 run to close out that first quarter.
Right.
To go, you know, the Spurs were down like, you know, 13, 15 points in the first quarter. Bench comes in, they go on a 10-2 run to get it within striking distance. And then they basically even up the game by the time the rotation's done in the second quarter. So that comes second half, the Spurs just, you know, blew them away. And, you know, that tipping point, once you start making subs, you're right, the game can go one of either two ways. Your bench can either, I guess three, they can, you know, keep it the same, or they can, what usually happens, they either cut into that lead or the opposing team starts to build on the lead and run away with it. And I agree with you. We've been talking about the Celtics' depth all year. It was a little surprising that they got outplayed by that Bulls bench during that first rotation.
And that's, you know, how the Spurs win, and that's how the Spurs have won for a long time, is their starting and closing units are going to play even with the opposition. And then the difference is going to be made up by the second unit. And the Celtics, you know, they're not where the Spurs are. There's no question about that in terms of their depth. Because you can look at Manu Ginobili, Patty Mills, and Pau Gasol, and Jonathan Simmons, and any of those guys can create their own shot with the ball in their hand. The Celtics, you know, struggle a little bit with that, with the second unit. And really, they're still in that same spot where Isaiah is the only guy who can, who can really create offense for himself. Avery can, to some extent. Marcus Smart can create offense and get to the basket, but his shot is still problematic. And still finding a cohesive second unit, I thought they'd be better than Chicago, but they're not where the Spurs are, where it's a real difference maker. So if you do lose,
Well, not to cut you off, but which is why, you know, watching that Celtics game, it did feel like man, how are they gonna win this series? They're gonna need Isaiah to do everything on offense,
right?
But I don't think anyone expected it to. This is gonna be a double negative, but it'll make sense to everybody who watches the Celtics. I don't think anyone expected it to not be ugly. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how the Celtics play. They have a chip on their shoulder. They grind. They play harder than their opponent for 48 minutes and get those ugly wins and stay in the game so Isaiah can make those big shots in the fourth quarter. And that's how they're going to have to continue to win in the playoffs.
But the problem in the postseason is that you're going to get max effort from the opposition as well. And that's what was so disturbing.
You're going to get max effort from the opposition. The opposition, there's no back-to-backs. They can shorten their bench and play their starters more minutes. So that kind of neutralizes some of the depth advantage that the Celtics have.
It's true.
But at the same time, you know, Bobby Portis, 19 points. I got to think there's no way he's going to continue that production moving forward. Things will get neutralized. And the Celtics should be right back in this.
It's The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan at the TD Garden, as it is a big week of sports in Boston. When we return, I sit down with Jay Crowder to talk about the Celtics. Also, we'll talk with the Chicago Bulls TV analyst Stacey King, who is on the Bulls championship teams with Michael Jordan. And you may remember, Matt, he was on the Celtics for 1 year in 1997. I'm sure that sticks out that well in your mind.
With Travis Knight?
Yeah, he's going to be coming up on the show in just a little bit. We'll also talk with New Hampshire's Timmy Schaller from the Boston Bruins and Red Sox pitching coach Carl Willis. All we return after this here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord
Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan inside the TD Garden. There's so much excitement going on in the city of Boston sports-wise. Red Sox off to a decent start of the year, and of course, nothing gets better than Bruins and the Celtics being in the postseason. And both obviously in first round play, day in, day out here at the beginning of the week, here inside the TD Garden. And of course, Marathon Monday as well, with all the grace and glory that is the Boston Marathon, Patriots Day here in the city of Boston. And of course, the Celtics series has been overshadowed by life and the grief and the public grieving of Isaiah Thomas, the superstar for the Boston Celtics, who has really taken this city by the heart. And, you know, I look at the landscape of Boston sports right now, and outside of Tom Brady, I think that Isaiah Thomas is Boston's most significant star. And you look around the arena, you see the number 4 jerseys, how he's inspired so many kids and people who, you know, may not be, you know, the biggest individuals. And he's been an inspirational figure to so many with his attitude, his heart, his style, his swagger, all of it. And, you know, when
individuals suffer loss, you very often want to retreat. You want to become insular. You want to mourn. And Isaiah has had to, you know, do all this in a very public way. And his game one performance was fabulous. The rest of his teammates, perhaps not so much. And we'll start things off with hearing from Celtics head coach Brad Stevens, as well as his teammate Avery Bradley. Isaiah did not talk after game one, which is certainly understandable given what he is going through. Here's the first Celtics head coach, Brad Stevens.
He was incredible. He's an amazing, amazing player, amazing person. And, you know, days won't get easier for him, but he, you know, somehow plays like that.
All right, Brad Stevens right there. Here is Avery Bradley. Prior to game one, Thomas was seen on the Celtics bench crying with Bradley's arm around him in a moment that really defined what was going on in the arena and with Isaiah.
It says a lot about him. It says that he's a true competitor. I know tonight he was playing for his sister. He was playing for his family, and we appreciate that as teammates. And he's just an amazing basketball player and even a better person. It's our job as a team to make sure that we're there to support him and keep him, you know, positive and just playing as hard as we can for him. I think that's the main goal for everyone in this locker room.
All right, Avery Bradley right there. Jimmy Butler was a story for the Bulls. Of course, there was rumors that Butler may be traded to the Celtics at the deadline. Well, he lit up the Celtics with 30 points and also grabbed 9 rebounds. And he, after the game, talked about Isaiah as well.
He's a hell of a player, but that's always tough to go through. And, you know, I wish him the best, him and his family. But it just shows the type of player, the type of man, the type of person he is to go out there and battle through what he was going through for his organization and his team.
Right after the contest, I had an opportunity to talk with Dwayne Wade of the Bulls.
As his team, you know, he can give them an extra push. You know, I mean, give him an extra push. It can go either way. But, you know, he played phenomenal. And, you know, I don't think he needs anything to give him the extra motivation. I mean, he's been doing it consistently all season. But for us as his opponents tonight, you know, this is a brotherhood. And like I said, all the hearts do go out to him. But as his opponents, we have a game plan and try to figure out a way to win the game. And we didn't stop him tonight, but we was able to, you know, hold and check other guys and be able to get a win.
From your vast playoff experience, what does winning game one on the road mean?
It means you won game one and you got a little confidence. It doesn't mean you're going to win a series. You know, I think for this team, you know, we got in the last hour of the regular season. So to come in and win game one, it's a lot of confidence. But, you know, you can't be overconfident. You still got to come in and you got to understand the next game going to be even harder than it was tonight. But, you know, whenever you win in the playoffs, you grow and you gain confidence by that.
Did you learn something about this group tonight?
You know, what I've seen, you know, this group, you know, this team has went through some adverse situations throughout this year. And even when we did it throughout the game, whether, you know, it was a run they made, or the guys weren't playing well, we stuck together. And I think, you know, all the adversity that we went through, you know, allowed us to be able to be in a playoff on the road, a lot of guys first time, and figure out a way to stick together and come out with a win.
Wait real quick.
Prior to the series opening up, I had an opportunity to sit down with Jay Crowder to talk about all the progress that's taken place here in Boston with the Celtics and where the Celtics sit right now and how much pride he takes in what has been a tremendous resurgence and turnaround for Boston's basketball team.
How much pride do you take in the fact that this team and all the players on this team seem to have gotten better each year? There's been constant upwards mobility, and this season obviously peaking the number one seed and hoping to do more moving forward.
It takes a lot of pride. I take a lot of pride into it. I take a lot of it makes me very happy to be a part of a group who likes to work.
Yeah.
And when I first got here, it wasn't as such. You know, it wasn't as driven as it is now. It's at a high, very high level of guys who want to get better. And that has shown with us being able to take care of business in the regular season and progress each year. I just think it makes it much funner to come to work and knowing you come to with some guys who want to get better as well. It just makes your job much easier.
each team kind of has to have that guy who's a conscience, who keeps everybody else accountable. And that, to me, seems to be you on this team. Like, you're the kind of the keeper of all that is righteous with the Celtics. You demand of guys that they work as hard as you do and have that attention to detail and focus. Do you see that as your role on this team, as you're kind of the conscience?
Yeah, that's part of what I bring. But I think it's a couple of us who does that, does their job in it. But I do my job and trying to keep guys focused and try to make guys keep working. And my attention to detail has always gotten me one step better than my opponent, and I'm aware of that. I may not be as fast as him or can jump as high as him, but I know what he wants to do. I know his tendencies and stuff like that. So I've always had that edge to just get better off the court as well as knowing what I have to do physically on the court. And that's just part of what I bring to a team. That's part of what my DNA is as a player, as a person, is to try to get better and outsmart my opponent.
You've gotten better each year with this team as well. And one of the biggest areas of improvement has been obviously the three-point shot and your percentage from there. How much of your improvement has been what's your natural skill set? And how much of it has been, you know, this is what the team could use at this point in time from this position?
Well, I think it's pretty much a 50-50 split.
Right.
Of course, I feel like I didn't want to shoot as much threes coming into my role here. But as the team got going on, the only time I get the ball is in it. Pretty much 75% of the time is a catch and shoot situation. So I knew I had to improve. I knew this last summer, that's one thing that I really tried to hone in on, is just my catch and shoot and my ability to sustain a shooting percentage a whole year. And that comes with health. That comes with a lot of different stuff physically that you have to work on. But I felt like I focused in on it. My mentality had changed a little bit, and it really has helped me.
3 years ago when you were traded for Rajon Rondo, what did you think this was? Did you think this was just kind of a stop? Did you think I'm going to need to try to find a role? Did you envision, you know, having the significant impact that you've had on a team that has a good chance to win a championship?
To be honest with you, at that point, I was worried about having an opportunity.
Right.
I felt like I was overlooked a lot. I didn't get the fair shot that I wanted in Dallas that I thought I had deserved due to my work. But I just, at the time when I got traded, I just wanted an opportunity to show what I can do for a team. That's all I could ask for at the time. I couldn't be picky because I was a guy who, in a thrower in trade. So, you know, you got to take it how it comes, basically how I looked at it. But I just wanted an opportunity, and I think I'm forever grateful that Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens really gave me that opportunity to show what I can do for a team.
One of the things that I like most of you as a player is that you enjoy and relish every opportunity that comes to you. The bigger the challenge, the more excited you get. You see LeBron, you see Jimmy Butler, you get excited about that. Who are the guys that you enjoy matching up with, you know, the most? And how much enjoyment do you take in the bigger the challenge, the more excitement?
Well, I've had that chip on my shoulder. The bigger the challenge, the more excited I get, because if you don't get excited for it, you get embarrassed. I can tell you that. So you have to be excited and be ready for that challenge. And I think my mentality as a person off the court, it comes on the court as well. I feel like for you to feel like you can play with the best, you got to prepare and be able to step up to the best and be able to challenge them. And I think that's what I try to bring to myself. That's what I try to take in as I come across those guys. But some of the best challenges in the NBA are the best scores. You know, you come across guys like Kevin Durant, the LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony. If you're not ready for those guys, you would get embarrassed, you know. And I think the fearfulness of not trying to let my teammates down, the fearfulness of not trying to let myself down, drives me to do what I have to do and do my homework on those guys and be ready for that matchup.
Final thing, when you look at the Bulls, what do you see? Obviously, it's a team that doesn't have the best record in the world, but a team that obviously has a lot of upside, a lot of big stars. Rajon Rondo, the potential to be, you know, to national TV Rondo every night, the night of this series. I think this is the perfect team for you guys to play. A team you can beat, but a team that presents challenges that will motivate you guys.
Yeah, it'll be definitely. It's not a cakewalk by any means. These guys are very veteran-driven team. They know how to win. I mean, very capable of winning, and I think as a group, as us, like you said, it's no other challenge to take on than a team that can really challenge you, and I think that'll help us grow later on. But I respect those guys, and they put a great 2 months together to end the season to even put themselves in playoff contention. So that there shows you what they're capable of doing as a team. But we have respect for those guys, and we respect the opponent, and we're gearing ourselves up to battle with these guys.
Jay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Jay Crowder right there. Also talked with Stacey King. He is the color analyst on TV, CSN in Chicago, for the Chicago Bulls. Of course, he also won three championships with Chicago from 1991 through 1993 on Jordan's Bulls' first run through the trifecta, the three-peat. Here is Stacey King.
What are you seeing from the Bulls coming into the postseason? Do you think they have something for the Celtics?
Well, I mean, they got a lot of playoff experience with key players. You know, the playoffs start 0-0. They're not a typical eight seed. I know their record says they're the eight seed, but they've had great success against the top teams in the NBA this year, and they've won a lot of those games. So I think they've got a slugger's chance.
I agree. I think there's a dynamic here with the stars where they could step up and they can perform above what their record was during the course of this year. And, of course, we've seen Rajon Rondo year after year here in Boston and what he can do. And when the lights are the brightest, Rajon Rondo usually steps up the most.
Well, he's been a key for us, especially in our resurgence in the second half. You know, he got benched early in the year. You know, for whatever reason, I didn't think he deserved to be benched. I didn't think it was his bad. He wasn't playing bad. And I think he came in and proved a point that, you know, in order for this team to get to the next level, he has to have the ball in his hands. He's not a guy that you can play off the ball and say make three-point shots. And once the Bulls coaching staff figured that out and gave the ball to him, the resurgence happened. And I think, you know, when he comes out here and plays against Boston and the fans and everything, I think he's going to be inspired. I think you're going to see the best Rondo in this playoff series.
What's the dynamic been like for the three stars, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, and Rajon Rondo? From afar, you know, obviously there's been some big blow-ups which have occurred, but on a day-in, day-out basis, have they been able to mesh together, or is what we see from a national perspective kind of the case where there's three divergent personalities who have problems?
Well, I think it was a little bit difficult in the beginning because you have three ball-dominant players that have to have the ball in their hands, whether it's creating or scoring the basket for themselves. And Jimmy and Dwayne Wade are dynamic scorers. Rondo's an assist guy, but he needs the ball in his hands to be effective. So I think early the meshing was very difficult because it was almost like they were taking turns coming down the floor. It's your turn. No, it's my turn. And I think it really hurt the team early as far as the gelling was concerned. But they were all professional about it. And I think once they realized that Rondo doesn't need the ball to score, he needs the ball to get you the ball so you can score, and he takes some pressure off of Jimmy and D. Wade by being a distributor.
What do you think the dynamic of Isaiah Thomas and the tragic situation with his sister is going to have on the Celtics? And obviously they are a team first and foremost. Their star power is with you guys, but I think that the team element is with the Celtics, and you know, a little, you know, chink in the armor here and there could hurt them.
Well, I think coming into the playoffs they felt that they had a you know, chip on their shoulder. They didn't get the respect that they think they deserve, and that can be a detriment to teams because they can overlook an AC. You know, because you're looking at Eastern Conference Finals, Cleveland, and you forget this is not a typical AC. So I thought that could hurt him in the beginning. But now, you know, with Isaiah Thomas losing his sister, you know, I mean, that puts a whole different element on there. Now the focus is that you can see the players rallying around him. Now their whole mindset is totally different now because you can see the focus being there, which in the beginning you could kind of sense they were overlooking the Bulls by not getting that respect factor. But now it's a whole different dilemma when you add that kind of travesty to the key member. He's the head of the snake, and the players will rally around him as well. So that's a dangerous combination.
Stacey King right there. There's also hockey in Boston as the Bruins and the Ottawa Senators play an opening round playoff series. And that series that a game apiece going into tonight's game number three here inside the TD Garden. The Bruins had a chance to be up 2-0, but blew a 2-goal lead in the third period up in Ottawa. And Timmy Schaller scored for the Bruins in that contest. His first playoff goal, of course, he from Merrimack, New Hampshire. We'll hear from him in just a second. But after that game, Bruins pretty disappointed, continuing to deal with significant injury issues, but frustrated with blowing the lead. Here is the Bruins' Patrice Bergeron.
Yes, we were expecting that. I thought we, you know, we played a little bit more on our heels. We were fine with just getting the puck in deep and not necessarily putting the pressure in the forecheck that we should have kept.
Here's Bruins defenseman John Michael Lyles.
You know, they're down 2 at home. You know, playoffs are you know, an up and down kind of animal, and they had a good push. I mean, it's the same thing we did last game.
So for Tim Schaller, an opportunity with some of the injuries in this Boston lineup, and he has made the most of it, scoring his first career playoff goal. He came into Boston just looking for a roster spot, and now he's looking for more, a contract for next year.
What did you see from this team, you know, down the stretch that allowed it to have success in difficult situations and kind of change the narrative from what had been the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone kind of realized that, you know, things needed to be changed, and, you know, our best players were our best players, and we had scoring from all four lines and you know, most every defenseman. So, you know, the entire team came together as one, and, you know, we showed how good we can be.
It seemed like, you know, 5-on-5, this team really made huge strides down the stretch of the season. The power play, penalty kill, special teams have been good throughout the course of this year. How important is that to see that 5-on-5 play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing in the playoffs is scoring 5-on-5, you know. You can have a good power play, you can have a good penalty kill, but you know, if you can score 5-on-5, I think any team can win the cup. So you know, we've really taken stride in working in our D zone to better our offensive zone, and you know, hopefully 5-on-5 we can take over.
Ottawa's been a frustrating team for the Bruins over the last couple of years for a number of reasons. Why do you think that Ottawa has presented the challenge that they have? It seems like a lot of times it feels like the Bruins are outplaying them, but you know, there's that goal that goes against the flow, and Ottawa's up, you know, we're tying the game when you're not expecting them to do so.
Yeah, they really like to slow the game down. You know, they really like to keep everyone to the outside and, you know, take away grade A opportunities. And, you know, they've shown that they can do that. You know, they've made it to the playoffs. They've done well this year by doing it. So, you know, we've worked hard in video. We've practiced on the ice. So, you know, if we can break up their neutral zone and get pucks to the net, get bodies to the net, you know, we'll have success.
Obviously, the story is not completely written yet, but your first year in Boston, kind of look back on that and the things you accomplished and, you know, making this, obviously, this dream come true.
Yeah, I had a lot of goals this year. You know, I set one of them by I playing the whole year up here. But, you know, I think I had a pretty good year. But what's good is I know I have a lot more to offer. So, you know, hopefully the team gives me a chance next year. But, you know, right now we're focused on playoffs, and hopefully I can be a big part of the team here.
Just been wondering, you have a sweet live free or die tattoo. What's the story behind that? When did you get it? And what's the story behind it?
Well, I'm born and raised in New Hampshire. I lived there my whole life. I love it there. So, you know, I've got a few tattoos, so why not throw it on there?
Tim Schaller right there. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center. Well, the Red Sox have jumped out to an 8-5 record on the season, thanks to taking the final three games of their four-game set against the Tampa Bay Rays, including the Marathon Monday game as well, the Patriots Day contest, where the Red Sox begin in the morning hours at 11 a.m. with the Marathon running just a couple streets down the road and behind the Green Monster. And the Red Sox off to a good start this year, as I mentioned, and one of the big reasons for that has been their catching tandem. Sandy Leon and Christian Vasquez have been fabulous in all aspects of the game, and I talked with Sandy Leon about that.
What's the biggest key to throwing out base runners, in your view? Because this, you guys as a tandem are so prolific at getting guys out. How do you go about doing it so successfully? Because the numbers are astronomical.
I mean, I think I got to be the, because the pitchers too, because they put really good time to home play. They give us the chance to throw the guy to second base out because they put a good time. And then, I mean, just being ready to who's running first. I mean, who we got on the mound too. So just, I mean, be prepared before that happens.
Do you have a spot that you're trying to hit each time that you put the ball down there? Like, is there a spot that you visualize that you want to hit every single time in Pedroia or Bogaerts' glove?
Not really. I don't think we got that much time to focus on that. Just trying to, put the feet on play in place, and then just trying to make a good throw.
How do you go about determining if you're going to throw behind a guy or if you're going to try to, you know, to pick a guy off? Is it just based upon the lead, the situation? What goes into your mind?
Situation, depends on situation, who's running in first, who's running in second, who's running in third, who being on the mound, what kind of pitches I'm calling, a lot of stuff, a lot of things. So that's, I mean, when I'm playing, so I don't think about that, just the situation of the game made me do it.
Do you see yourself and Christian as kind of as a tandem, as a team, as a guys who share information and or help each other?
Of course, every time. I mean, every game, almost every inning, we talk about his pitching, about who's leading off the inning, and then in the next inning. So we trying to get like a game plan before a game too, so we can talk about it.
All right, Sandy Leon right there. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Also checked in on the Red Sox pitching staff, both starters and relievers. We've got an update on David Price's progress as well with Red Sox pitching coach Carl Willis.
Now, you've never really had a schedule for David Price, and everything's been kind of, you know, based upon how he was feeling from one point to the other. That being said, it must be pretty encouraging, the signs that we're seeing with Price and how he's been able to kind of continue to make progress, it seems, without pain.
Well, it's very encouraging, and he's thrown the baseball, to this point only fastballs off the mound, but more importantly, it's coming out good, it's coming out clean, and he's having no adverse effects
right
the day after. So that's a very positive sign. And as you said, there's not a timetable because we have to make sure that, we do this the right way. But we're very excited about the way it's going right now.
Chris Sale's been everything as expected and advertised. I'm sure he's frustrated by, the lack of run support so far this year, as any pitcher would be. But he's been everything as expected. And as we've seen in the past, it's difficult for guys to make the transition to Boston. But he seems to be happy, enjoying life. And when he's on the mound, he's ferocious.
Well, he really is. He is... really a very special competitor, and he enjoys the game. He works at a tremendously fast pace.
Yeah.
I think that helps him in a number of different ways. And to be quite frank, we talked about it as far as the run support goes. He knows he's going to get run support, and he expects a lot out of himself. And after the Detroit game, he was disappointed because he felt like he didn't do his job, and we should have won that game 1-0. So that's a lot to ask, particularly when you're looking at Detroit's predominantly right-handed hitting lineup against a left-handed pitcher. So really excited about Chris.
All right, that is Red Sox pitching coach Carl Willis. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center. We'll return with more with Matt from the TD Garden after this. Again, you're listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics, inside the TD Garden. Bruins and Senators play in the first round, Celtics and the Bulls in the first round as well. We have it all covered for you here on the program. Now, we didn't touch upon it too much in the open, but what Isaiah Thomas is dealing with right now, and it's obviously been talked about a lot, and the building was behind him so much, but I think that one of the aspects that's being missing, that hasn't really been discussed as much, it's been missing, is the fact that when anybody suffers the type of loss that he suffered, you really want to retreat, and you are kind of numb to what's going on around you. How in your view, does describe kind of the mindset that an athlete has to have in the playoffs, and particularly an athlete like Isaiah who have to find something a little bit extra in order to get done what you want to get done out on the court. And it really didn't seem that there was much of a visible effect on Isaiah's game. It was more the Celtics who were struggling as a whole in game one.
Well, first off, I can't imagine what he must be going through personally, having to, go through, like you said, just the emotions of such a great loss, such a devastating loss, such a tragic loss. And to be, to be faced with this, not to sound bland, but professional obligation that is, it's a playoff. It's very mentally and emotionally consuming. It takes so much focus and mental focus to prepare yourself and be successful come playoff time. It's just a mental preparation. So, to have to go through such a tragedy off the court at the same time, it's pretty incredible. Not incredible, but I don't know how to verbalize what I'm trying to say, but hopefully you get my gist.
We get it. We're picking up what you're putting down.
So yeah, thank you. I'm flailing here. I'm drowning on this one. But from a motivational standpoint, it seems like, when I remember, and I'm not trying to compare this as being as tragic, but, I remember when my grandfather died, I think I was like 16 or 17, and I had an AU tournament and he passed, and you know, I wasn't going to miss any of the services or anything, but I had like an AU game that night, and I remember trying to like figure out if I was going to play in it or if I wasn't, and I just remember like thinking, you know, he watched so many of my games growing up and supported me so much playing basketball. Like I'm going to play this one for him. You know, he supported me this whole time. I'm going to do this for him and have a great game and play hard because that's what he would have wanted. And that, you know, kind of mentally gave me the motivation to go out and do what I'm supposed to do on the court. And obviously this is 1,000 times higher level, bigger everything.
Right.
But I think, you know, his family, his sister was probably in a similar thing, supported, they grew up together, obviously supported him his whole life, and maybe he can use that as some sort of motivation to get him through this tough time on the court. And also, I think, goes to show just how much of a professional he is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, playing in the playoffs isn't like crashing for a test, pulling an all-nighter for a test. You know, he's been preparing for this moment through his professionalism all year. You know, all summer, all training camp, all preseason, all 82 games to get yourself ready. So you kind of rely on that, lean on that during a time like this too, I think.
So this is a real Boston sports question here for you. Which team is in more trouble right now, the Bruins or the Celtics, in your view? The Bruins having lost, you know, that game too. They're in a tough series. They have a lot of injury issues right now, particularly on the back end. And so if David Krejci as well, their second line center, the Celtics are in a situation where obviously the team is dealing with, you know, the loss of Isaiah's sister. And they're also dealing with the reality of how difficult it's going to be to, you know, to win this series. The Chicago Bulls have underachieved throughout the course of this year. They're 41-41. They've been tumultuous at times. There's been disagreements with Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. And there's a lot of drama within that locker room. But now, you know, after that game, I think that opened, you know, Dwayne Wade said it on the program in the middle segment, that it opened their eyes about what they can do in this series. So which team right now do you think has the better chance of making it out of the first round, the Bruins or the Celtics?
Well, this is a tough one for me just because I'm not much of a hockey analyst. You know, the extent of my playing career ending at White's Park, on the White's Park Pond in February of 1992, when I outgrew the skates you could rent at the Skate Shack. But I will say this, the Celtics, it's just game one. They're healthy. You know, it's terrible what Isaiah's dealing with, but it didn't seem to affect him on the court too much in game one. I thought he played really well. And I think the Celtics over a 7-game series, having that depth is better than what the Bruins are going through with all the injuries. And, you know, playoff hockey's so fast and so physical that lack of depth, I think, in the grind of a 7-game playoff hockey series spells trouble.
Final thing, you know, as I mentioned, the biggest kind of glaring weakness for the Celtics was rebounding in game number one. And, you know, Brad Stevens, it's, as you mentioned before, I mean, it's pretty rare to find a huge rotation of guys. Like, you're usually set with that 8 or 9 guys. We've seen that from Coach Pop over the years, and it's kind of the traditional NBA thing. And the Celtics, you know, used 11 guys as Stevens was trying to find, you know, the right group of guys to play together. And that's pretty much what we've seen during the regular season as well. So if you're the Celtics, how do you go about addressing the rebounding issue? Some of it was just simple stuff like not boxing out and allowing guys to get to the rim. Other stuff was height issues, battle issues. So how do you go about, if you're the Celtics, rebounding better against the Bulls? And is it, you know, as glaring a problem as it, you know, seemed statistically in game one? The difference in second chance points, Celtics were -8 in second chance points, Bulls 23, Celtics 15.
Well, I think that can be cured with awareness and effort. Obviously, they're going to look at the box score and the tape and see they got their butts kicked on the offensive glass. And, you know, the Celtics are going to use that film, that box score, as motivation to come out in game two and correct that by what we call gang rebounding. Everybody, you know, be physical with your box outs. Everybody's going to come in and clean up the glass. It's not up to just one guy. It's not just up to your two big guys out there. It's all five have to crash that glass. And as a team, you have to correct that mistake that basically cost you game one. And I think it's totally doable, especially with a Celtics team like we've been talking about, who has that chip on their shoulder, is hungry, and hangs their hat on effort stats like that and outplaying their opponents.
Well, Matt, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
All right. It's The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.